Hello, look at the fingernails. Nice. Before they get bitten off. Me with the new neurotic fingernails. And look how short some of them are. But anyway, before I get on to this video, yeah, you can see my fingernails. So behind me is the house of Fitzroy Somerset. Later he was Lord Raglan. So he's distinguished as a military commander in the Crimean War, 1853 to 56. So he didn't see the end of it. There you can see this lovely house here, Stanhope Gate, very close to Hyde Park. And indeed, he didn't die there. He died on campaign in Crimea. He died of natural causes. So he's depicted in many films, Lord Raglan. Is it too bright? Is that a bit easier? So you see the portico for resting under the rain as you're waiting to go in. So very well appointed, stuccoed white. And I remember being extensively rebuilt during lockdown about 3 years ago. It's now obviously Hyde Park Mansions, absolutely luxury residence. And Hyde Park is that away. So Lord Raglan is born in 1788. So significantly the year before the French Revolution. He was born in the West Country, was at Gloucestershire, and his father was the 5th Duke of Beaufort, which made Lord Raglan a 6th generation descendant of King Charles II, because King Charles II had about 20 children, travellers, none of them with his wife, but he didn't abandon his children who were born the wrong side of the blanket, or can see the wrong side of the blanket. The boys, he would grant them aristocratic titles, whereas the girls, he would insist that aristocrats wed them. So that's why Fitzroy, as in Fitz, born outside of marriage, say illegitimate. I don't like to use that word. I don't like to use an opprobrious term for people who are born outside of matrimony, as 51% of children are in this country these days. But anyway, so then he went to Westminster School, where he was not particularly academic, and then he was brought a commission into the armed forces, because from the 1660s to the 1860s, the Cardwell reformers of the army, commissions were purchasable, and they almost all were purchased. And obviously, depending on the rank, the price varied. The guards' regiments were more expensive than the regiments of the line, because the guards, as in those days, Coldstream Guards, the Grenadier Guards, Scots Guards, Irish Guards and Welsh Guards didn't exist in the 20th century, or the Horse Guards regiments, as in the Blues, the Royals, the Life Guards, there were three regiments of them, they were here in London, right? And so they only went abroad if it was the war was really severe. They needed every man they could get, so they could still live their social life and politic. He served with the Duke of Wellington in the Peninsular War in Spain and Portugal. He'd also been to the Ottoman Empire, when it was obviously quite a puissant force, trying to convince the Ottomans not to come in the side of the French in the Napoleonic Wars, and managed to successfully do so. And incidentally, Raglan, he was absolutely fluent in French, and he was not a Francophone, despite some later faux pas. And then he was very close to Wellington, and indeed married Wellington's niece, with whom he was blessed with 3 sons and 2 daughters. So then he was involved in the Hundred Days campaign, like March to June 1815, as in when Napoleon sailed back from Elba and landed at Golfe de Juan on la Côte d'Azur, and marched north to Paris, fighting just south of Brussels, the Battle of Waterloo and all the rest of it. So yeah, Raglan, he was then elected a Conservative MP just after the Napoleonic Wars, and was fairly reactionary. But so fast forward to the Crimean War. So Crimea is a peninsula of Ukraine, not Russia. And Russia had obviously taken off the Ottomans in the 1770s, but it's changed hands numerous times before that. It's been an independent Tatar kingdom. It was part of the Byzantine Empire, part of the Roman Empire. Goodness knows who else has it. It was only part of Russia for about 180 years. Going on to this, so Russia was breaking the Treaty of Unkiya-Skelessi by building fortifications on the Black Sea. They promised not to do so. They'd invaded the Danubian principalities, were now, I suppose, called Romania, to help Romanians become independent, fellow Orthodox Christians, though they speak a Romance language. France, the United Kingdom, indeed Piedmont, decided this was not on. They would come in to save the Ottoman Empire, so they proclaimed war upon Russia. Russia's capital was to St. Petersburg in those days. So Russia, in some ways, is very culturally Francophile, but politically obscurantist. It was an absolute monarchy under Nicholas I, who was an out-and-out reactionary. So the war commenced. The British wanted to hold Constantinople at all costs. Coûte de coûte, they had to prevent the Russians getting this warm water port access to the Sea of Marmaris, then obviously be the Aegean, and then the Mediterranean Sea, because they wanted that to be a British lake. Remember, there were British bases at Malta and Gibraltar in those days, not Cyprus until about 1879. Then another thing to bear in mind is, so, you know, the Ottoman Empire, the sick man of Europe, was propped up by the British Empire, remembering that the Sultan, he was seen to be the Caliph, or the Khalifa, the successor of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him, and thereby the leader of all Sunni Muslims. That's about 80% of Muslims. And remember, the majority of the subjects of the British Empire were Muslim, not Hindu and not Christian, because, okay, British India hadn't completely reached its furthest extent back then. But bearing in mind that the Pakistan and Bangladesh are part of India in those days, obviously the British imperialism in Africa was only really on the littoral, but expanding eventually into Nigeria and elsewhere in Kenya. They were to take in quite a few Muslims, and Malaysia and so forth. So what's the next step? So that's why they declared war against them. The idea was that Britain would support the Grand Turk, and he in turn would tell Sunni Muslims within the Britannic Empire to bear allegiance to the British monarch. This worked to the First World War. Actually, when the Ottomans went to war against the United Kingdom and they exhorted the faithful to rise up and revolt against the infidel, very few answered the call. It seemed that the Ottoman Sultan did not have the sway over Sunni Muslims that he or anyone else imagined, and realized that it was just out for the Turkish national interests. There was no wider moral or religious significance to what he was saying. So coming back to this, the British Army was very amateurish. There wasn't proper military training apart from, say, the engineering officers. And yeah, you can imagine how badly it would go. People simply got their promotion on the basis of money, to some extent aristocratic connections. A bit like the Royalists, say, in the English Civil War. And there was a lot of basic incompetence, and not enough supplies were sent out. A lot of soldiers died needlessly from poor medical care, the commissariat being so disorganized, insisting forms be filled out in triplicate. This is when the Lady of the Lamp, Florence Nightingale, was to make her name. But Raglan, he prevailed over Prince Menshikov, the Russian commander at the Battle of the Alma and so on, and was trying to take back Sevastopol, that main port on the coast of Crimea, which is significant once again. So it was very, very costly, but he actually died of an illness there. Now, the following year, Russia folded. Now, Tsar Nicholas I had been called to his reward and was replaced by his younger and more verrichter brother, Alexander of that name II, who brought a war to an end because the Austrian Empire, which had been supposedly an ally of Russia, having saved their bacon against the Hungarian nationalist rising in 1848, the Austrians threatened to come in on the side of the Allies against Russia. And Russia was having a very difficult time holding Crimea, and they just couldn't fight a two-front war. Suppose the Austrians were to invade from the west. So they made peace. So it was an Allied victory, but quite costly. Exposed a lot of basic incompetence in the British Army. And Raglan had a most disconcerting habit of calling the Russians the French, because he was casting his mind back 40 years earlier to when he was fighting against Napoleon's legions. And the French were, of course, his stalwart allies. And despite this rather undiplomatic gaffe, well, he made on numerous occasions, he maintained cordial relations with his French brothers in arms. Thanks so much for watching the channel, and subscribe on Patreon and donate on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Toodaloo.